You're listening to the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's Queer Media, and today we are taking a look at a very serious issue, and we have in the room with me, well actually in the next room over, but it's radio so you can't tell, so whatever. We're joined. Your mic may not be on, there we go, that.
There we are now.
In more ways than one.
Hi, I'm Mike.
And we're also joined by Dylan. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm well. Nice to be on the radio.
Excellent. And we may be joined a little bit later by Seamus and Sebastian, who are running a wee bit late.
So we're never.
I know. It is an uncanny situation.
It's probably the hordes on the stairs that are stopping them.
I know. It's like first week back at school, and everyone and their grandmothers here, like, oh my gosh, so many people.
It was their first week back.
Yeah, it's, I don't start till Monday, but that's, whatever.
Yeah.
They'll
be here, you know, for the first 2 weeks, and then
the novelty will wear off by the end of January.
Yeah. They'll be like, I don't need to go to class anymore.
And then we'll see them again in May at exams.
Been there, done that.
Anyway, so today's topic is, it's quite serious. We're kicking off January with what was the phrase I used? Safer Relationships Month, I think is kind of the angle we're going with. So there'll be a lot of conversations around communication, consent, all that kind of fun stuff. So what we're going to be talking about today is kind of a strange place to start, and that's really when things don't go so well, when you're in an unsafe relationship, when there isn't consent, for folks, we want to get a bit of a trigger warning here. We are going to be discussing intimate partner violence and domestic abuse, as there's a lot of different names for it, so some folks might recognize it under different words. Do you find that language around the topic has changed, and that different people identify with different phrases for it?
I don't know if the language has changed. It's become more inclusive. It used to be set as basically the abuse terminology, and now it's grown to encompass physical, mental, psychological, all kinds of different distressors as well as abuse.
Yeah, and I would say that domestic violence would have been probably the term that you would hear more often. But I think people are, trying to kind of talk more about intimate partner violence to kind of reflect the many different types of relationships that people might have. Maybe it's not necessarily a domestic situation where you're living with someone, but a person that you might be in a relationship with, in a friendship with, a family type of relationship. There's a lot of different kinds of relationships that people are having. So I think that would be probably one of the ways that I think that we're kind of focusing the language. And I think also the terms in terms of victim, perpetrator, abuser, survivor, I think those are all kind of terms that people are using in different ways. And even just not even focusing too much on the victim, perpetrator, survivor, abuser binaries, I think people are also trying to open up conversation around, what does that mean to not always see things in a binary type of way?
One of the things that I've seen coming out of the UK is, people affected by, it's folks affected by domestic abuse. Because, of course, it's not just necessarily that the two individuals. It could be, folks in the family. It could be children in particular are particularly affected by it. And then also the community. And I think it's important that the community is also, acutely aware of this. And I think it's very important that we, as a community, recognize the signs and know what to do. And I think that's part of what motivates this particular show, is to equip our glorious, amazing listeners, and you are both of those things, listeners and glorious and amazing, we want to equip you folks with the tools to be able to, you know the signs, become better educated about the topic, and be a resource to folks who may need some help.
Well, you know, it's funny but not funny. Being aware of the markers and being aware of the situations doesn't mean you're actually going to see it if it happens to you. Mm-hmm. For instance, way back when I was younger, I was involved in CUSA and Frosh Week and Foot Patrol, and we were told, you know, tell people, if you hear these words, encourage them to leave. If you hear this situation, encourage them to leave. And then one day I was sitting where I was living and my partner said to me some things that included, I do this to you because I love you. And all the bells just went off, mm-hmm. because that was the key phrase we told people. If you hear these words, leave. Don't stop for your coat. Just pick up and go and don't go back, because it's not going to get any better.
And you know, how true does that ring today? I mean, are there you know, particular phrases and so on where, you know, perhaps that is a red line and you need to walk away?
I think people, I mean, we've been hearing about domestic violence and intimate partner violence and sexual violence for like decades. It's been prevalent the whole time. I mean, I think it's has a lot more media attention recently in the last few years, but it doesn't mean that it wasn't an issue that kind of always was around. Like, you know, back in the 1980s, people were being like raped in the tunnels here at Carleton. Like, that is not new news, kind of. Mm-hmm. But I think it's not even so much about recognizing the signs. It's just, I think, if you really boil it down to kind of picking the whole kind of culture apart, it's even not recognizing like what are the signs of a healthy relationship. I think, you know, if people aren't, you know, told, you know, that you're allowed to have boundaries, if you're kind of growing up in a society or culture where, you know, you're not expected to know what your wants or your needs are, it's really hard to communicate that to people. So I think, you know, yes, these are, you know, warning signs and these are all the different phrases that you hear, but it doesn't necessarily reflect people's actual experiences. And if we tell young people growing up that, you know, you don't get to have a say over your body, if even like little children, like parents, you know, forcing their children to like hug strangers or to accept kisses, and, you know, like from a very young age we're kind of socialized to accept, you know, things that might make us feel uncomfortable. And it's also recognizing that not everyone has the same comfort levels. You know, I might be a huge hugger, but maybe Mike doesn't like hugs. I love hugs, but I know a lot of people who don't like hugs. And, you know, our first thing that we do when we see people is like, hey, give that person a hug. And we don't even ask if that's something that, you know, they consent to. So mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, changing the culture as well as just like understanding like what our own wants and needs are, because we have no idea and we don't live in a sex positive society. So like, how do we even figure that out?
Yeah. It's trial and error. And unfortunately, not much is going to change in society, because the predominant focus on society is still status quo for almost everything. Change is incremental.
Mm-hmm. But we're certainly seeing some changes. You know, you're talking about over the past few decades, and it's worth noting that without decades of work by, you know, women working in the violence against women prevention industry, that we wouldn't have anywhere near the kind of knowledge and support that's available now. Like, we're working off the backs of some truly incredible people doing some truly incredible work, and I think it's important that we recognize those efforts and say, you know, a great big thanks for that. So how you know, you mentioned that there was a phrase that was a red line that you were told, and, you know, but one of the things that I was told is that it takes a woman an average of 7 years to leave a domestic violence situation, because it takes a long time to recognize the signs. But then, you know, this is, you know, intimate partner violence is, you know, your intimate partners. It's not easy to just pack up and leave in some cases. You know, you could be married, you could have children, you could be economically dependent on them, you could be, you know, there's been cases of people threatening the you know, the family pets, or you could be socially isolated. How do you identify patterns of behavior emerging that might be able to help prevent domestic violence? So, for example, economic dependence is a good one. You know, people slowly become
It usually starts with self-esteem. Once a person's self-esteem is whittled away at, and they lose the confidence in themselves and their own decision-making capabilities, the isolation starts then, with the first nitpicking. And you don't see it. Nobody sees it. All of a sudden, it's just there. And, yeah, I can understand how people can't walk away from things. When I was married, I can't say it was a situation of spouse abuse, but psychologically it wasn't a healthy relationship, probably for both of us. I gave my all, and she didn't quite give her all. So that I didn't understand it at the time, and eventually I had nothing left to give, and when that happened, she left. There was nothing left to give. Well, I could have left earlier, but I didn't want to because my self-esteem was attached to my value as a person with another person.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But before we do, this is A Great Big World. This is the new year. Just to kick off our celebration of being in 2016. And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Another year you made a promise. Another chance to turn it all around. And do not save this for tomorrow. Embrace the past.
Welcome back to the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's Queer Media, and today we're talking about prevention strategies around intimate partner violence. And we are joined by Seamus. How are you doing?
Shemai Campers, hello. I'm very well. I'm glad to be here. I'm sorry I'm late, Dylan. And let's go on.
Oh, sure. I don't even get a
row with a bus.
I don't even get an I'm sorry out of that.
No, no apologies to Mike.
No, no. It's the host.
Do. So just before we left for the break, we were talking about, as an individual, some ways that you can work to prevent inter-partner violence. And, you know, for me, I've always stressed, and I'm sure my partner's listening, I've always stressed the importance of communication. Always, always communicate. And I can kind of tell when he's not telling me something. And, you know, I've got to wait for him to feel comfortable to have a conversation. But it's always, always important to have clear dialogue. Is that something that you see coming up in conversations with folks that you work with, or that you've seen, you know, the importance of communicating as a tool to preventing things escalating any further?
So I work with the Ottawa Coalition to End Violence Against Women, just to give context, because you were kind of asking me with the people that we work with. I think communication is absolutely super important. I think knowing how to communicate clearly and honestly and being able to express your wants and your needs is a super healthy way to engage with, like, people in your life. I also recognize that, you know, if you're experiencing violence or in a situation that has a bit of a power dynamic, it might be difficult to be able to express your wants and needs clearly. Perhaps expressing your needs or a criticism or anything could put you potentially in an unsafe situation. So, you know, and back to our conversation about signs, I think, you know, if you're asking yourself different questions like, you know, am I able to openly and honestly communicate my needs with my partner? If that is something that you feel like you cannot do, then perhaps that is something to kind of, you know, inquire about or look into, or, you know, talk to someone in your support network, which I also think is like a super, super important thing to have, is people around you outside of the relationship that you can speak with about your relationship. And I think it's hard in the queer community because everybody knows everyone. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are a little bit afraid, perhaps, to talk to people. They don't want, you know, bad reflections on their partner. They might not want, you know, people to start talking about your relationship. There's a lot of silence in the community around, especially intimate partner violence. So I think communication is important. Communicating with people around you that support you, and also just asking yourself, like, can I even openly communicate with a person?
So you look like you had something to say to Mike.
Oh, yeah. Seven things crossed my mind. Yeah. All of which she's already addressed.
Yeah. I think that's definitely, it's like I said, it's really important if you feel that you can't have that communication. I like that you mentioned, you know, a support network. I think that's really, really important as well. How does one be, you know, an active supporter? Like, how can I be available? Let's say Michael Seamus. How can I express myself in a way that's like, you know, I'm there if you know, if there's the defecation needs the air conditioning. You know, that's,
well, I guess the only way to really make sure that the people you're around are aware that you can be talked to is to tell them. Regularly, you know, when you're out for coffee or whatever, and the topic does come up, you see it all over the place. You see a couple having an argument or a discussion, and then you go, well, how do you deal with your friends when you're in a discussion and or an argument? And then it can grow from there. It all depends on how much they trust you.
Right, right. You have to, and those kind of things, unfortunately, they do take time and time to build.
Yeah.
Speaking on personal experience, my partner that I was with for 8 years, I never thought that he had a violent bone in his body. But the last 2 years of our relationship did become physical. Now, it was difficult for me because I grew up in a violent home. I saw my stepfather beat my mother. And to me, it was just that whole idea of what you were saying. You can't, you don't want to say anything. You don't want to get the other person in trouble. You love that person so much that you go in denial. You say, okay, it's something I did. It's something. And it's so bizarre because when I look back now and I think, yeah, I was in such denial about a red flag. It was just out of the blue, odd behavior. Came home and I had a beautiful picture of my granddad, army picture, and it was gone. And I said to my partner, I said, where's my granddad's picture? He said, I don't know. Turns out he put it in the closet. He hid it in the closet. And I was like, did you put that? Well, I just wanted to see what kind of reaction I'd get. Hmm. That right there should have been like a flag for me. But I just was like, okay, he's joking or whatever. But that should have been a flag. So all I can say to someone is if you notice something that's like a really odd behavior, just tune into it. Tune into it. And and try to have strength to talk to a friend, to open up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a big part of experiencing violence it's hard to know. Like, the whole, a huge proponent of intimate partner violence is isolation. So people who might be experiencing violence, oftentimes their partner won't, allow them to talk to people. They don't want them to make new friends. They don't want them to speak to their family. Like, there's all of these different aspects where, you become more and more isolated. So, I think, if you see someone who, used to be really bubbly and out and used to talk a lot of the times and, they're not coming out as much anymore. Or maybe you don't see them or they don't, answer you. Like, I think it's like you said, tune into that. But at the same time, you can't decide for that person. I think everyone's the expert of their own experience. So I think just, telling them that, if they ever do need to talk, that you are there for them, that, you think confidentiality is important, that they can trust you, that, it won't go beyond, them, that you are not going to judge them for what they tell you. Because I think a lot of the times, too, people are afraid to speak, to people about their relationships or, toxic behaviors or all these different types of, power dynamics, because we don't want people to judge us. People might tell us that we have to leave and maybe we're not ready to. They might, maybe that is not something that you want to do at all. There's all different types of, realities for different people. So I think, saying listening, not judging, being non-judgmental and critical is super important. Making sure that you're, whatever you talk about is confidential. Like, maybe they can't text you. So, don't send a text to someone who you might believe to be in a relationship that's toxic and say, hey, how's that abusive relationship going for you? Chances are their abuser are reading all of their texts. So, just kind of making sure that you can plan for safety around, ask them what they need, say whatever you need, I can help you with that. Meeting, in different times of the day. There's all different types of things that you can do. But I think it's super important to just be non-judgmental, to not expect them to do anything, to allow them to kind of figure it out and just say, hey, I'm here for you. And no matter what, I'm here. And if, that's something that's really difficult, because I also recognize that too, sometimes it's hard to watch people that you love be in an abusive relationship. And if that's something that you cannot do, don't be inconsistent. Don't say that you'll support them and then, turn around and let them down. I don't think that that's helpful either. I think it's really important to say, be consistent, be hey, I'm here for you. Don't take it on as your own feelings. It's not about you. Even though it's difficult. Mm-hmm. And if you feel like you can't, then, say hey, I don't think I can be there in that way for you, but I'm going to try to help you figure out to get that support you need. So whether it's professionally from the sexual assault support center or a therapist or a counselor or maybe another friend that you can speak with. I think there's a lot of different ways you can do it, but just make sure that the person that you're talking to gets to have a say in what support mm-hmm. looks like to them.
I think that's really important that you recognized individuals' capacities. I mean, it's all well and good to be the white knight and to storm in and be like, I'm going to save you from your relationship. I mean, but that doesn't work.
That's what America did around the world.
America. Yeah. But there's a lot of, do you have the time? Do you have the emotional capacity to be able to deal with that? Because, of course, it's a huge commitment to want to help somebody, because you need to be there, like you said, consistently and able to support. And I think that's where it's important then, to be educated around what resources are available. If someone did come to you, let's say somebody came to me and said, I've been, relationships is a bit rocky, and told me some of the things that I would recognize as red flags. Where would I then direct them? Like, who in the city would I direct them to if they were female? Or identified as female.
Yeah, so if they were, you know, like identified as female or woman, or even if they're genderqueer and have, you know, grew up socialized as a woman, I think there's a few different places I would say. I think the Sexual Assault Support Center of Ottawa is a great resource, as well as the Ottawa Rape Crisis Center. The only thing with those two centers is that they're more focused on sexual assault and sexual violence versus intimate partner violence, which are both connected issues but also different. For example, you know, if someone's sexually assaulted, it might have been like a one-time thing, which was a very traumatic to them, and they might need support around that, versus like support through like an ongoing relationship that's lasting over time. So I think if you connect with them, it's not like they're going to turn you away. Family Services Ottawa has some really great programs around domestic violence. They have a queer counselor there. They have a intimate partner domestic violence unit. They have a children who are witnessing violence unit as well. And they're also connected to a lot of the different shelters. So if you need to leave a situation and you don't have anywhere to go. If you're queer, it's a little bit more complicated. There's not really any explicit resources for someone who might be lesbian or gay or trans in the city. I think, like I said, ORCC and SASC, so Ottawa Rape Crisis Center and Sexual Assault Support Center, they're queer-friendly and they're working on inclusion. But it's a little bit more difficult if you're, you know, a trans-masculine person, or if you're a queer man. There's not a lot of resources. And a lot of the men's resources, and Luke, you could probably speak to this because I know you're doing a lot of awesome work around it, are not really centered for queer folks or queer experiences, but also they're oftentimes resources for people who have to go because of, you know, the judge in their case might make them go to, like, court-appointed therapy. And so oftentimes you're kind of getting support with folks who might not necessarily want to be there. They're kind of appointed by the criminal justice system. So, and there's just generally not a lot of resources for men. And I think that's a huge issue, especially if you're, like, living with HIV or queer. There's just so many different dynamics that make your world smaller and smaller, and there's not a lot of resources. But I would definitely start with ORCC, SASC, and Family Services if you are looking to support. There's also a lot of really awesome counselors in the city who could help. Immigrant Women's Services, for if you're an immigrant or a person of color. I think those are really great places off the top of my head.
And there is also a bit of a stigma attached to being seen approaching any of these organizations. So you can always just go to a walk-in clinic. I was talk to them at the desk.
Yeah, I was
pick up
say
the brochures that are on the counter. Even your family doctor, or even the emergency room of the hospital. These are places people are likely to end up.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Regardless.
Because it could be overwhelming, you know, a center like that, even just to, again, stop that denial and admit what's happening for you, to just go to your family physician.
Self-acknowledgement is a huge step.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good point, Michael.
I know it's interesting. In the UK, the family doctors are actually one of the main points of entry for folks who are into intimate violence situations. We're going to cut to a song. It's a recent song, and we wouldn't be a gay show without Lady Gaga. So,
who? Who? Have you seen her husband lately? Oh, sorry, not husband yet.
Anyway, this is Lady Gaga with the fantastic song "Till It Happens to You." I think this is has some really important messaging. When we get back, we'll be talking about we'll talk briefly about shelters, and I'll speak a little bit to resources from available to men, and then we'll discuss you know, some more community proactive tips as well. So
tell me it gets better in time. You say I pull myself together, pull it together, you'll be fine. Tell me what the hell do you know, what do you know? Tell me how the hell could you know? How it feels till it happens to you.
know it won't be real. Won't know how it feels. You tell me hold your head up, hold your head up, and be strong. 'Cause when you fall, you gotta get up, you gotta get up. Till it happens to you, you are.